Good evening once again, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. May I have your attention, please? Thank you very much. We're about to present the awards to our colleagues tonight who have achieved a measure of success in this business, which we should all envy. So if I might have your attention, I will tell you about tonight's awards. We are recognizing six, ladies and gentlemen, of our colleagues tonight for outstanding work. If you will look on the last page of your programs, you will find listed the four awards which are presented each year by the Correspondents Association. The first award, ladies and gentlemen, if I can have your attention, thank you, is the Merriman Smith Award, conceived to promote the excellence which he brought to his craft. The Aldo Beckman Award, designed to recognize a Washington correspondent who personifies the journalistic excellence of the late Chicago Tribune reporter, is the other of the first two awards. Those two are controlled and administered by the White House Correspondents Association. We have two others. There is the Raymond Clapper Memorial Award, a $2,000 first prize, a $500 second prize, and there is the Worth Bingham Award, a single award of $2,000, which has been presented since 1967. Will the winners please step forward as their names are announced to receive their prizes? Ladies and gentlemen, it is my privilege and pleasure to tell you tonight that the $500 Merriman Smith Award is presented to Owen Ullman of Night Reader News Service. Mr. Ullman was selected unanimously for his outstanding coverage of the Reykjavik summit between President Reagan and Soviet leader Gorbachev. The winner of the Aldo Beckman Award is W. Dale Nelson of the Associated Press. The judges were particularly impressed by the versatility displayed in Mr. Nelson's stories, which they felt to be in the tradition of the journalism practiced by Aldo Beckman. Ladies and gentlemen, the winners of the 43rd Raymond Clapper Memorial Awards are, for the first prize, Bob Adams of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch for the excellent reporting of U.S. policy in Central America. And for the second prize, Thomas Moore and Michael York of Knight Ritter for their reporting of open heart surgery. Mike York is accepted. The Worth Bingham Prize of $2,000 is awarded this year to Bob Woodward of the Washington Post. Bob is being honored for his coverage of the clandestine arms sales to Iran, and particularly for, among other things, step right up here, Bob, and don't be bashful. The centerpiece of this award, according to the judges, was the disclosure made by Bob of a plan to feed disinformation to the press. Congratulations, Bob. Now, will all the award winners please come forward once again to be recognized by your peers? ladies and gentlemen, the evening is just beginning. But I need this. Mr. President, ladies and gentlemen, if there is one thing that's apparent at these dinners over the years, it is that political humor, for the most part, is generally best left to the professionals, or at least to those who have writers. So, in that spirit, I want to introduce our guest tonight, one of the brightest new comic stars, a regular on the Carson and Letterman shows, a regular substitute, in fact, for Johnny Carson, and soon to appear, as they like to say, in a major motion picture. Ladies and gentlemen, it is with great pleasure that the White House Correspondents Association presents to you Jay Leno.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mrs. Reagan, thank you. It's always nice when a comedian is recognized by his peers. I never understood why the president gave so few press conferences. Now I know why, I think. This is kind of crazy here, but... Oh, gosh. Jay Leno was the name there. This is certainly every performer's dream, I guess, to work in front of media people that are eating. I can't really think of... Well, I'm just checking out what's... But I'm fairly new. This is all new to me, this Washington thing here, and I've been following... sanctions on Japan, which I think are kind of interesting. See, personally, I'm not bothered by the sanctions. I drive probably one of the last of the true American cars. I've got a 1955 Buick Roadmaster. See, this is when they built cars out of steel. No padded dashboard on this car. You had it in a dash. They hose it off and sell it to somebody else. Well, you can turn off the siren, Bob. He was driving a Buick. What a death wagon this thing is, boy. Radio knobs look like Bowie knives sticking out of the dash. You know, the windshield's about 7 feet from the steering wheel, so if you hit something, you just free-form through space for 2 minutes. Bam! Right through the plate glass window. Actually, this is a big car. This car seats seven for dinner. All right, this is what I'm talking about. The car is big, it's clumsy, it eats gas, but it's great for scaring the hell out of Honda Civics on the highway, boy. Boy, you pull up behind a Honda Civic, he thinks it's Jaws. Na-na-na-na-na-na. Little head, big steering wheel there. You look like a maniacal weeble driving this thing. About once or twice a week, I find a Toyota Corolla crushed up under the fender wells, you know. My mom wanted to be patriotic. My mom bought a Chevette. What a Cheerio box this thing is. Hey, it's a nice car. It's a cute car. It's got no power. Put a bag of groceries on the seat next to me. I got a downshift to keep it moving at this point. And it's little. You know, I don't realize how little these cars are. Do you drive them? I'm driving this stupid thing. Pull up to my house, open the door, I hit this wall. I said, geez, I remember this wall being here. It was the curb. I got it set up to cut grass now. I got to make a few dollars. The American gas station, remember when it used to be called service station? We see what ARCO has done? Here's a pretty smart company. ARCO has managed to combine the all-night mini market with the 24-hour gas station to try and give you a one-stop robbery center. You see, this way criminals don't have to drive around all night wasting gas. You pull that at 9:15, you shoot the attendant, you're in bed by 11, you know. Try and find a good mechanic is another joke. A General Motors has their clown, Mr. Goodrich. Now, what nationality is the name Goodrich? Is it some kind of Indian name?
I am good and work with Wrench.
And, of course, Mr. Goodrich is just the most honest mechanic in the world, this guy.
A new engine? Oh, no, Mrs. Smith. Why, it's just his little 29-cent fuse. Oh, there'll be no charge.
Well, this guy's never around when you bring your car in for service. Yeah, Mr. Goodrich, you know, Mr. Goodrich? Yeah, well, he ain't here right now, but his brother-in-law dead batteries out back there. to make me mad are the cheap insurance companies. Why do cheap insurance companies always try to get bad drivers to sign with them? They never call you a bad driver before you sign. They always call you something like
an unlucky driver, huh? Hey, you're the kind of fellow who every now and then you like to have a few drinks, maybe plow into the side of a school bus, huh? Sure, you had a quart of tequila, but maybe you had a little bad luck, too, didn't you? What a stupid place to put a playground. That kid had no right being on them swings in the middle of the day. Probably swinging negligently. Well, then you get yourself a lawyer, more geniuses. Now they have a legal clinic at Montgomery Ward. What kind of yin-yang goes to Montgomery Ward looking for a lawyer? You figure you're up for manslaughter. Come on, let's go to Montgomery Ward. I want to get an attorney and, pick up some underwear and some socks while we're down. Getting here today was no day at the beach. I came in on U.S. Air. I guess most of you might have to. Used to be Allegheny. I think every time they hit a mountain, they change the name of this stupid area. Have you flown U.S. Air? What? This is like stepping in the hole of some kind of flying slave ship, this thing. No seats, bodies piled on bodies. All the pilots are lined up in the terminal. They're pumping quarters of that insurance machine. Saw a terrible movie, Clue. That was the film. You can see this movie, Clue. It's interesting. It's based on the board game, Clue, the detective game. They did something. This was one movie that had three different endings. They shot three different endings. The idea being no matter what theater you went to, you saw a different ending than your friends did. But the movie was not successful. The Americans don't like one movie with three different endings. So we like movies like Rocky. See, here are four different movies, but all have the same ending. You see? A little easier to understand. No actual thought has to go into the viewing. They're doing Rambo 3 now. I guess not many of you seen Rambo 1 and 2. I haven't seen them. I read the book. Yeah, they were kind of interesting. They really weren't books. They were pamphlets I got from some Lyndon LaRouche people out of the airport, you know. Just your basic Rambo opens fire, page 2, the end. Yeah. Actually, my favorite scene in Rambo is the one where Stallone says, or rather Rambo says, you know, it's funny, when you see acting that good, you tend to confuse the character with the actor. Where Rambo says, the mind is the most dangerous weapon. Is that right, Rambo? You got to take a couple of these rocket launches with you, pal. Gee, you don't want to be wandering around now with a 22 caliber head. I tell you something, you know, a lot of people make fun of Stallone, a lot of people make fun of Arnold Schwarzenegger and Chuck Norris. Let's be honest, what these guys have done, I think, is opened up the acting profession to a lot of people who couldn't get into it when speech was a major requirement. You see, now any troglodyte that can wield a tire iron in a public saloon is a potential Academy Award winner. Well, this is very exciting to me. I see so many of the people I've seen on TV here, so many of the correspondents and whatnot. Interesting things happen. I guess the strike now is settled at CBS. Some dramatic things were happening there. I guess Dan Rather, for a while, every night was ending the news with courage. He would say, courage, courage. And couldn't figure this out. I think I got to figure. We get Dan Rather to ask for courage, Broca to ask for a brain, and Jennings to ask for a heart. Think of the Wizard of Oz. You can use that one. My favorite time to watch the news is always in the sweeps week, the ratings period. Because you got to admit, you know, when it's a non-ratings period, you always get these sensible segments, you know, living in a deficit economy, the plight of the American farmer. Suddenly sweeps week come along, it turns into strip searches of Catholic girls' schools. Are they necessary? You know. I tell you, I think they need to hand out the flashy stories a little bit more. Now, I see one of my favorite guys on CBS, Charles Osgood, never gets a big story. You know, as you watch CBS, you see this is Bill Clinton of the White House, or Sam Donaldson over here in the President's Tour. You know, all of a sudden, Charles Osgood comes out, and his three bears came walking down Main Street today, you know. Jed Koppel is good. I like to watch Nightline. I like Nightline when they bring on the experts, you know, whenever there's some sort of, if there's a nuclear problem or something, they always bring out the same three
West German guys. And they always say the same thing.
Nuclear power is a risk.
Of course it is a risk. Everything in life is a risk.
You can cross the street and be hit by a car. This is a risk.
Well, that's true. But, you know, if I'm in Washington and I get hit by a car crossing the street, they don't tell people in Sweden not to eat vegetables. You know, a little different. Well, I guess, as most of you know, next month marks the official one-year anniversary of Hands Across America. Kind of hard to believe that just a year ago we had a homeless problem in this country, and now by holding hands, it's all been solved. But you know what's amazing? This is how we affect major social change now in America, isn't it? When we want major social change in this country, what do? We hold a rock concert, hold a comedy show on cable, we all march from California to Union City, New Jersey. You know what's amazing? Nobody even thinks to use our best tool for social change. It's called voting. Could we try voting once in a while for something? Do I really have to stand in a ditch holding hands with Robert Blake and Morgan Fairchild now to accomplish something? You know, I turn on the TV, I see them, and I always see these foreign countries, these people don't seem to like us. Everybody seems mad at us. No, we seem like pleasant enough people. And you say, so why don't these countries like us? What are we doing wrong? You know, when I had an incident happen, it kind of makes me understand. It puts things in perspective there. It's my nephew's birthday. I went to Toys R Us to buy him a present, and I see piles and piles of this toy, Mr. Potato Head. Mr. Potato Head. How do you explain to people that are starving to death that in America we grow food for amusement purposes? You know? How do you explain to little Kimba in Biafra somewhere? See the potato, Kimba? Oh, Kimba, eat potato. No, look, you don't eat the potato. You put this little hat on it. There you go. This is the only country in the world. Food that we grow, we make a toy out of. Food we make out of chemicals, we eat, we advertise. I just saw Burger King is advertising something this week. French toast sticks. This is bread that's been rebreaded and dipped in oil. And of course, they're all selling chicken now. You know, chicken is big. Why are they selling chicken? Well, because it's more nutritious. It's more healthful. I mean, the fact that it's deep fried and rolled in beef fat, it doesn't seem to play a part. You know, I always like to watch McDonald's and Burger King. They always compare themselves to each other. Neither will take the chance of comparing themselves to real food. You know, you can take a box of chicken McNuggets, you can put it right in front of a chicken. A chicken will get there and go, I see nothing here that offends me. This isn't cannibalism. I heard the president speak the other night. He was talking about the educational system in this country. And I think television is much to blame as anybody else. The networks, they keep putting on the same silly shows, the same kind of shows. They show these game shows, the dating game, the newlywed game. You know, there's a reason they do this, though. Although the literacy rate in this country is low, the networks are worried that it's not quite low enough. See? So by bringing back shows like The Dating Game, what they hope to do is mate genetically inferior people in the realization that they will reproduce mutant offspring, thus ensuring the next generation of contestants for the game show, you see. It's all a new book called Frontiers of Science by Bob Eubanks and Dr. William Shockley there. Lifestyles of the rich and famous. This is like Karl Marx's worst nightmare come true, this program, isn't it? This is like capitalism on acid, this show. I mean, why do rich people even go on the show? All the show is a video gift catalog for criminals. They have cable here at the hotel. You know, I tell you something. I don't have cable at home. I got in late last night. I turned on the cable. And it's one of the cable stations there, not the network stations. And, you know, they're talking about sex. They're talking about drugs. I'm saying, you know, Ed Meese is right. This Playboy channel is pretty raw. And then I realized the PTL Club. Just one of those things. And here's something always amazing. Why do big stars do this, you know? I like Danny Thomas. I like George Kennedy. Why do they have to try and sell these sleazeball insurance policies to the elderly and these poor veterans? Are you 50 to 80 and thinking about life insurance? Come on, what 80-year-old guy is just thinking about life insurance? You know, honey, our children are in their
their 60s now. And well, God forbid, if we ever have that motorcycle accident, I just want to know those kids are taken care of.
And the benefits, if you're hospitalized, they pay you $50 a day, cash, $50. How are you going to spend that kind of dough at a hospital? You want to put an extra stitch in my head, Doc? I'm getting $50 a day, okay?
Here's an extra $2. You split that with the head surgeon.
And that's not all. They'll pay you $50 every day you're hospitalized, regardless of length of stay. And let's be honest, as soon as this hospital finds out you're only getting $50 a day, you're not going to be hospitalized too much longer, right? Well,
you'll be in a rollaway bed in the parking lot by the time you figure it out. Any coffee achievers in the room?
That'll try and get kids to drink coffee. They show rock star David Bowie drinking coffee. Come on.
To David Bowie, a cup of coffee is merely a sedative at this point.
What are we, idiots? I'm watching TV. I see an ad for Grecian formula. The man in the ad has white hair. The next day, he has black hair. Nobody seems to notice this amazing phenomenon. He goes to the office. Secretary says, I look younger.
Boss wonders if I've lost weight. Is the company going to wind up on the Fortune 500? Huh?
It says right on the bottle, no one knows you use it. If nobody knows I'm using it, why am I buying this stuff in this place? You know, don't you get embarrassed that maybe people from other countries will see some of these things? Huh? Like these American Express ads, aren't these embarrassing? They show these noodle-brained Americans traveling around the world, constantly annoying people from other lands. Then suddenly these toad heads, they just lose their traveler's checks. La, 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 la. And they never seem to lose their checks in any reasonably civilized country. They're never in London or Paris. They all seem to be stranded on the Iran-Iraqi border somewhere, you know? Khomeini's banging on the door. A bunch of slave traders are touching this guy's wife all over the place. This guy's thinking, if I had those checks, I could buy her back right now, you know? Products. There are people that try to make things right. The only thing wrong with this country, nobody reads directions. Single men are the worst. You ever see a single guy try to cook a frozen pizza? This is unbelievable. It says right in the box, the best results cook for 10 minutes at 400 degrees. Most guys think it's like a poof, I'll cook it for 1 minute at 4,000 degrees. Spoke to my mom and dad tonight. My mom and dad are very excited that I'm here. And as I mentioned, the paper, I said, my mom is a big fan of Mrs. Reagan's Kids Just Say No to Drugs campaign, although she feels it's misnamed. She feels they should say, just say no thank you to drugs. This way they'd learn a little something about manners and whatnot. Which is a good idea when you think about it. The Surgeon General now says that all parents should talk to their kids about sex. Yeah, good luck with my mother. You know, I'm 36. I've been married 7 years. My mother still runs out of the room when a brassiere ad comes on television. You know, that always looks very good when people tell you to do it, but they never do. I remember I was 15 years old. My father was going to tell me the facts of life. This is what he said. He called me in the living room. He said, son, you're 15 now. You're going to be a big boy there pretty soon. Let me ask you something, son. This business with the birds and the bees, you know anything about it? I said, yeah, Dad, I know a little bit about it. Good, good. How do the Yankees look this year? How are we going to win? What do you think? My mother always gets worried about this time of year, tax time. You know, she still thinks the IRS is going to find out about that summer I mowed lawns in high school. See, I come from New England. We have the old round kind of moms up there. You know, those little Pepperidge Farm 4x4 moms, you know. In California, where I live now, you know, the moms smoke marijuana and wear halter tops. And you got grandmothers with names like Bambi and Muffin. I got the kind of mom that irons socks, you know. They iron the toe of the socks in case your shoe falls on someplace important. People know you come from a good home. You know, I was home about 3 weeks ago. My folks are going to be with me. My dad wasn't feeling too good, so he couldn't come tonight. But, you know, my mom is one of those moms. There's a whole generation of moms like this. She's so afraid she's going to do something wrong. She's so honest, you know, that kind of. I was home about 3 weeks ago. It's an absolutely true story. And my mom and I were
was sitting up late. My dad had gone to bed. My mother said, oh, I saw a blouse uptown. Oh, it was $90, but your father said it was too much money. Oh, I want to. I said, well, look, man, here's $100. Go buy it. She goes, oh, no, I can't take money from your father. I'll be very upset. I said, go ahead, Mom. Oh, no, he'll get upset if he knows I took money. I said, look, take the money. Don't tell him. Oh, no, I cannot tell you. I said, look, just take the $100. Don't tell him. It'll be our secret. Buy the blouse. Don't say anything to him. My mother goes to bed. My father and I are sitting at breakfast the next morning. My father said, what the hell's the matter with your mother? She's a nervous wreck. She's up all night. She's pacing. I said, I don't know. I look up, I see my mother bringing my father's coffee. This is absolutely true. My mother's like this. She's shaking like a leaf. My father says, what are you going to do today, honey? You going to do some shopping? She throws it. It's my mom's secret agent. Bought my mom and dad a videotape machine for Christmas. I thought, I'm trying to drag them kicking and screaming into the 20th century there. But, you know, I figured this would be good. They can videotape shows. They can watch movies whenever they want. You ever try to explain to your parents how to use that automatic timer? You know, my mom doesn't even want to learn. This is the thing. I say, look, Ma, first press the day you want to watch TV. I want to watch it today. Doesn't say today on the machine, Ma. You have to press Wednesday. How does it know Wednesday? It just knows, Ma. It's got a brain. When I told my mother you could take one show while watching another, you would have thought I said, men from Mars have landed, Ma. It's the end of the world. Men's technology can go no further. My phone bill is hundreds of dollars every month calling home trying to explain to my parents how to use this stupid videotape. Now look. Tell Dad to put the tape in and press play. You have to press play.
Your father says it'll cause a fire.
It's not going to cause a fire. Press play.
He's afraid to touch it.
He was in World War II. You know what I do now? I go home at Christmas, I turn the machine on. When I went back for Easter, I turn the machine off. Okay? It's the easiest way. You know what they did all winter to save electricity? My mother would unplug the VCR every night and then plug it in every morning, and she can't understand where the clock keeps going 12, 12, 12 all the time. You know, I've gotten in more trouble with this stupid machine. You know, backstory here. My folks are a little old-fashioned. When I told my mother I was getting her this videotape machine for Christmas, you know, right away she thought, oh, those things cost hundreds of dollars. Your father and I could be all upset if you spend all your money on a big gift. You don't spend a lot of money. So I told a little white lie. I said, look, Ma, a friend of mine runs a video shop here in town. He gets them wholesale. They're only
$25. Oh, $25. Well, that's okay, $25.
About a month later, I get a check for $100. She wants four more machines for the neighbors. They just came out to see me in California, which is fun. I like bringing my folks out there. My parents are not good at going on the road. You know, they don't. You know, my dad likes to do. He likes to go to Sears. This is my dad's idea of a good time. You know, I said, why don't you come out to California? I think of the beach. You see where the movie stars live. Yeah, sounds great. How's the paint department out there? But you know, I got to think about this. You know, my dad's 77. He's in the hospital. A little scared. Nothing big deal. You know, and I got to think about this. And I never officially told my dad that I loved him. I mean, I know I love him. He loves me. But, you know, a lot of guys are not good at this Alan Alda, Phil Donahue stuff, you know? I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to tell him I love him, make it official, just so he knows. You know, God forbid something happened. This was the most awkward thing to do on the phone. I got on the phone. My father answered the phone the same way he's been answering the phone for 77 years. Yellow! You know, he can't say, oh, yellow! Hi, Dad, how you doing? Who's this? I said, listen, Dad, I've been thinking about you. You've been a pretty good dad and everything. I just want to let you know that I, kind of like, you know, like I was doing. He says, what? I can't hear you. I said, nothing. I said, I was thinking about you. You've been a pretty good dad. God forbid something should happen to you. I just want to call and let you know that, I care about, like I was doing. He said, wait, you're stuck. You want me to come get you? I said, no, I'm not stuck. I want you to come get me. I'm fine. I said, I was thinking about you being 77, you know, in case anything happened, just want to let you know that I love you. Just want to let you know that I love you. Oh, you love me? Okay, I got to put your mother on the line now. Okay. I said, you've been great. Thanks for letting me talk to you a little bit. Enjoy your evening. See you all later. Bye-bye.
and gentlemen, in the past year, the White House Correspondents Association made a modest amount of progress toward putting some of its substantial surplus into a scholarship fund, and an even more modest amount of progress toward defining its present-day role, whatever that is, other than giving this dinner. Both of these projects, I enthusiastically pass along to the next president of the association, Norman Sandler of United Press International. I will pass the gavel to Norman after doing two other things, which are very important. That is, thanking Sybil Graves for her assistance in putting together this enormous dinner, and thanking all of the people who worked on it. We try for an economy of verbiage at these affairs, and so with no further ado, I am delighted to pass the gavel to the next president of the White House Correspondents Association, Norm Sandler.
I'd like to thank Bill for this. It'll prove very useful, I'm sure. And I'd also like to thank Bill for the time that he's put in over the last year as president. As for whatever problems he may be leaving me at this point, we can discuss those later on. My job here at this point is to fulfill a promise I made to Bill, which is that I'm going to speed this thing along as quickly as possible. That should be relatively simple, since the task I have is an easy one. And also because anyone would be a fool to try to out-funny Jay Leno or upstage our next speaker. With that, it's a pleasure and it's an honor for me to present the President of the United States.
Norm Sandler, and since I've been in this office for a while longer and you're just starting, you mind if I'd make a suggestion? Might make things easier for you. On August 8th, write down what you did. And of course, Bill Plant, outgoing, here we are, Bill, both outgoing presidents. Since you're doing it a little ahead of me, I hope you won't mind if I come around later to find out what it's like in the outside world. I know we share some experiences by way of our office. I understand that a gentleman from Maryland some time ago wrote you recently registering a complaint and suggesting that there should be a button on TV sets that we could press and make your camera bounce billiard balls off your head. I don't want you to take offense. I wouldn't push that button for anything in the world, you know. But I was so fascinated by his high technology abilities that I'm putting him on the Federal Communications Commission. That we're just back from California. We introduced Howard Baker to ranch life. We put him in the saddle and he really took to it. He told me he'd never been so excited by anything, but just sitting in that saddle made his heart race. Next time we're going to put the saddle on a horse. Well, a lot happened while we were gone. Texaco declared bankruptcy. Senator Simon declared for the presidency. Gary Hart did both. Then we had that little thing with the Japanese. Jim Wright and I agreed that there are three things we must do to balance the trade deficit. We can't remember what they are. Also, So last week, Amy Carter was in the news. I'd always thought that if she rebelled, it means she'd become a young Republican. And we've still got that spying problem at our embassy in Moscow. You have to use a child's magic slate to communicate. I don't know why everyone thinks that's such a big deal. The Democrats have been doing a budget on one of those for years. But the Soviets have really gone too far. It's no secret that I wear a hearing aid. Well, just the other day, all of a sudden, it went haywire. We discovered the KGB had put a listening device in my listening device. I know that a lot of you have been having some fun with my advancing years. You even tied my recent surgery to my age. Well, I got to be honest with you. I had that same operation when I was young, and it felt so good I wanted to have it done again. But I am aware of my age. When I go in for a physical now, they no longer ask me how old I am. They just carbon date me. Incidentally, I've got a news item for you. We have a spinoff from our Star Wars research. It's a helmet for me to wear at press conferences. All I do is push a button and it shoots down incoming questions. You have to admit, though, that my attitude is better than linebacker George Atkinson's when he was with the Oakland Raiders. Someone asked him what the player's reaction would be if the press box blew up. He said we'd have 30 seconds of respectful silence and then continue with enthusiasm. Now, honestly, I don't feel that way. Maybe once in a while. I'm sure we get exasperated now and then with each other, but that's just the friction of freedom. You know, when I first got to Washington, I tried to establish a relationship with Tip O'Neill, and we were doing pretty well. And then one day, I picked up the paper and read something that really prompted me to call him, and I said, Tip, I thought we had a good relationship going, and then I read this news story. And Tip said, well, buddy, that's just politics. After 6 o'clock, we're friends. I started wearing a watch that was permanently set at 6 p.m., start wearing that watch again if you'll do the same. You know, in spite of our disagreements, I have a positive opinion of reporters. And I think it all goes back to one of my favorite reporters, Ernie Pyle. During World War II, his columns about your boys, as he called them, were devoured on the home front. His books were bestsellers. His understanding of ordinary soldiers was clear and heartfelt. He himself was a victim of the war, killed by enemy machine gun fire. He once wrote, there is a good deal of gaiety in wartime. Humor and exuberance still exist. Our soldiers are still as roughly good-humored as they always were, and they laugh easily, although there isn't as much to laugh about as there used to be. Well, if we keep the need for humor to be important parts of our jobs as correspondents and politicians, maybe we can get through the daily battles without losing our spirit or temper or perspective. I think this would be good for both the press and the presidency. Nancy, would you like to join me up here for, please? I know it's getting late, dear, but it's not often that we have so many people who've written about us and broadcast about us all together in one room like this, and I thought you might like to say a few nice words to them. They're all from the press and radio and television. Maybe just a friendly little greeting would do. How about just a word or two, something friendly, even one kind word?
I'm thinking.
Seriously, my friends, as always, we've had our share of laughs tonight at one another's expense, which is as it should be in a city where the issues are important and the passions run so deep. Maybe the fun and good nature of evenings like this is a good place to start.
So thank you for your hospitality, and thank you for inviting us. Thank you.
At this point, I'd like to extend our thanks to President and Mrs. Reagan for being with us tonight. Next year, to avoid the necessity of cutting short their vacation, we'll just toss this bash out in Santa Barbara and come down from the ranch. With that, I'd just like to ask the audience to remain in your seats as the President and Mrs. Reagan are escorted out of the room. Thank you.